Welcome to Year 2 of the Funding Love Podcast. I'm Mallory Elrod.
And I'm Caitlin Duckworth. We are two adoptive moms that seek to love, support, and elevate all corners of the adoption triad, including adoptive families, adoptees, and birth parents.
We do that through honest conversation with both expert and everyday voices about all things adoption and more, all while running our nonprofit, Funding Love.
We create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people.
We are Funding Love.
The podcast. Hey guys, it's Kate. Welcome to episode 104 of the Funding Love Podcast. You guys, we have a super fun guest on the show today, Kendra McQuarrie. Not only is she an adoptee, but Kendra was a castaway on season 45 of the show Survivor. So I'm not going to lie, in the beginning of this episode, Mal and I kind of fangirl for a little bit, and we talk about all things Survivor. And Kendra, not going to lie, spill some beans on some of her experience on the show. It is so much fun. I hope you all enjoyed that part of the show. But we also talked to her about her story. Her story as an adoptee. Her story reconnecting with her birth father at the age of 18. You guys, this is some good stuff. This is some eye-opening stuff. And we are so grateful for her vulnerability and sharing part of her story on the show. I know you all are going to enjoy this. Take a listen. Okay, welcome to another episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We are here with Kendra. Kendra, welcome. You are our first survivor on the podcast, and we can't wait to talk about that. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, ladies. I am so happy to be here.
And tell us where we're communicating from. You are all the way, you know, in the Pacific somewhere. Tell us where you are.
You know, I just was really sad about leaving Fiji. So I said, why not go to another island? Why not live off grid and, you know, live off coconuts again? So I am back. I live in Maui. I lived here 3 years ago. And then the world had other things for me to do. So left island and now I'm back on island. And I'm really, really, really grateful.
That's amazing. Living here.
Yes. Yeah.
Listen, Maui is one of my, like, husband and I's, like, magical places. We love, it's just, there's something special about Maui. I love Hawaii in general, but Maui is like, I don't know. I'm a little bit jealous. That's awesome.
Oh my God. Well,
we'll tell our listeners, you were on season 45 of Survivor, and that was I love every episode, every season, but that was a fun season. And I think it made me feel like a lot of feelings watching it. Like, it was, I loved all the players, the contestants. I loved the dynamic between the players, all of it. But there was also, like, some feelings, and I'm sure you literally experienced it, but some feelings of, like, little irritation along the way, you know, as a big fan. And we'll talk about that. We'll get into that. But I was like, man, I had all of the feelings watching season 45.
For sure.
But I do want to hear from you, like, summarize your experience before we get into the adoption conversation, because we have a lot to talk about there. But summarize for us in a few sentences, what did the experience on Survivor mean to you?
Oh my goodness. The experience on Survivor for me was kind of like this reimagined and re-realized childhood dream. I grew up a Survivor fan and then lost Survivor for like 12 to 15 years and then fell back in love with it. So being out there was just, it really was just the adventure of a lifetime. I'm a very adventurous person and I just always feel called to things that bring me closer to myself. And
yeah,
the amount of stokeness that's like, like, I was just so stoked the entire time I was out there, like through all the ups and downs, that was my constant. And so it was just definitely the experience of a lifetime.
Mm, yeah. I can imagine totally break you down. And like open you up, you feel like you said, like a whole experience of yourself.
And I'm curious, had you applied several times before or was this just like a whim? Like, I'm going to apply for this season.
It was literally the most whim in the fact that like my casting producer was like, how many seasons have you seen? I was like, I haven't seen any in probably like 12 years. And I watched like two. She's like, Kendra, you need to watch the new era. I was like, new era? Like, what do you mean?
Yes. Yes.
Like, it was that, like, I had to like cram a lot of studying in a short amount of time. But what's crazy about Survivor is, yes, you go out and you play the game and you film it. And then you have this like waiting period. And that's a whole other experience until the edit comes out. And then the edit comes out. And that and like reliving something is such a crazy experience, and like through what they want to show. So not only is being out there and playing the game an opening and just very transformative, but also everything that comes with it along with the casting process. So it took up a year of my life.
Wow.
That's pretty small compared to a lot of the other people I've played with who've been applying for years or in and out of the casting circuit. And so, yeah, the experience in all, like you don't see what goes behind the scenes. And I think part that was almost more transformative for me and kind of like opens me up even more than just being out there.
So when from when you came home to when it aired, what was that time frame?
I came home at the end of May, and it aired in the end of September.
Oh, okay. So it wasn't a crazy long wait.
No, it wasn't. Thank God. I was like, I can't be on 46. I cannot possibly wait till February. Because they stayed right after us. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, I was really grateful for the timing and the season that I ended up on for obvious reasons. It was an amazing season.
Yes. So, you know, there's so many challenges I feel like being on the show. What was the toughest for you? Like sleep, hunger, the social aspect, the physical aspect, like what was it for you looking back? Now this might be a loaded question, but like, what would you say for me immediately looking at the bugs?
Yeah.
For me, I'd be like, my eyes wide open, like something's crawling on me, but tell me.
That's hilarious. So I think I tend to look at things with like kind of rose colored glasses. Like I think my memory has this rose colored glasses. Of course, it's hard when you're out there, but my main feeling was just super real. Like I was really just having a good time. I'd say the hardest part for me was the first couple of days on Bello. Bruce and I's relationship was really strained, and he really triggered a lot of parts to me because like he straight up like wouldn't even talk to me, wouldn't ask me questions about myself, like even just like two people on a beach. And for me, I was like, we don't need to play the game together, but like we're just two people in this amazing experience, and like you don't want to like get to know me. So that really triggered like these feelings of feeling unwanted and that are from my childhood, and these feelings of like, yeah, I'm not enough. And so I definitely felt like myself going through that. There was one day where I just like cried to the producers. I was just bawling my eyes out. I was so sad. And I just want to be good with people. We don't have to, like I said, we don't have to play together, but like we could still like respect each other as people. Know, so that was difficult for me. And then around day 10, the toll that no eating, I had not had any food other than like a little bit of coconut and coconut water for 12 days. But day 10, my brain really started going. I remember being in confessionals and them asking me like, oh, what's the plan? I'm like, plan?
Yeah.
Like I'm just a body right now. There's like nothing. I'm just... I'm just a meat suit at this point. So that was really difficult. And then the paranoia, you know, like once you feel it and just learning how to trust yourself. And I would say the hardest part is dealing with the repercussions of not trusting yourself afterwards. So like the island's hard, but I found integration and dealing with losing and failing much harder than actually being out there. Sure. And dealing with the edit. So I'd say that's the hardest part of the journey for me. Not the island. The island I could do all day.
Yeah.
But the afterwards is a lot.
Yeah, that is interesting. Because the edit is like this much, right?
Right. You don't have any say in what actually gets shown or what story gets pushed to the forefront, which one gets pulled to the back. And so that has to be hard. Yeah, because you could have one little thing that you said that didn't feel like a big deal at the moment, but it's brought to the forefront of the show. Right. And then you're like, oh man. Yeah.
Or you're like, oh, they're definitely going to show this. Cause there was like a whole twist. Right. Like the first episode I was involved in this like hidden twist that wasn't shown.
Oh wow.
That I went over and casted a vote at the Lulu Tribal Council when Hannah quit, but because Hannah quit and there's no vote cast, they didn't show me making all these strategies, making all these alliances with Sabaya and Sean and Caleb, like, I was
that was crazy. Good.
Yeah. And so I have a lot of insecurity with not being seen as like somebody who is like strategically playing the game, because a lot of my strategy wasn't shown due to the way the cards fell, you know, and they didn't include. And so I was super bummed. I remember crying at the premiere, being like, oh, the premiere, like I'm going to be like all within the premiere. Like people are going to see my social game. I felt really good about it. Yeah. So I lied to Bello and then told the girls the truth about who I got close with. Like I was really feeling like I had gained a lot of social capital, and like if things had gone differently come the merge, you know, if John or Sabaya was still there, I numbers and I would have been in the dominant alliance. But things and we should have thrown a challenge, you know, it's all these things you think about afterwards, and like of course like revisionist like memory and calling back things. Obviously things are different the way we remember them sometimes. Right. But yeah, I remember being really upset that they didn't show that twist.
And as fans, we were so frustrated with that very first episode as well. We were like, what the heck? You took a spot of someone that really wanted to be there.
That's the whole thing. That's
and
so
then to know that it also like completely thwarted another great gameplay. Oh, that's hard. That's rough.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it was really hard.
Yeah, and so talking about the way they edit it. So what we see, of course, as fans watching, so this is like a little bit of a gameplay question. So like the core four that seemed to be according to the edits and what we saw as fans, Drew, Austin, D, and Mama J, right? They seemed kind of like together. Were they truly like that tough to penetrate? Were they that hard? Like you looking back on your gameplay, could there have been another way to break them up? Now, this seems like a cruel game, right? Because going back and what ifs are such a really cruel game to play. But it is kind of like, you know what I mean? But I'm just curious, like, but like the reality of the strength of their alliance. I mean, was it true what we saw?
Absolutely. But, you know, it's so obvious to the viewer that, go for the Reba Core 4, go for the Reba Core 4. They were not speaking at daytime. They did not speak with anyone else around. They were not seen. It was seen as like duo. So it was like Austin and Drew, then Mama J and D. But Mama J was always saying, coming up to me, I'm on the bottom. You got to help me out. And I was like, oh my God. Mama J does not get enough credit for how good her social game was. She had me wrapped around her finger. Like we had so many deep discussions, and like, she's always telling me she's on the bottom. And like, I saw her not really talking to them. They would get up in the middle of the night while everyone is sleeping and go meet on the beach. Wow. We never saw them talking together. We never saw their closeness. And so, like, they did a really, really good job of hiding that. And, you know, it's so obvious to the viewer, but when we're out there, it's like, oh, like Reba numbers. And I think the biggest mistake that I made as far as, you know, breaking up that alliance was trying to be too flexible and keeping my options open with the six split when Kelly and D won immunity. Mm-hmm. And instead of sending Sifu home, we should have sent Drew home, and we had a chance.
Yeah.
And I was really open to working with Drew and Emily and Austin from New Bello. So I was really trying to keep a backup plan, because like Bello was, Bruce was like, impossible for me to work with.
He seemed that way. I mean, he seemed like a difficult, like once you kind of like, you know, crossed him, it was like peace out to you. You know what I mean? That was kind
of very inflexible as far as like gameplay goes, or just being open to something different. And so I found that really difficult to work with. And he's also an adoptee. We have so many things that I feel like Bruce and I are great friends now. We have such a wonderful relationship. I love him so much. We kind of look at each other sometimes. We're like, why couldn't we have done this on the island? But
I love to hear
him
that.
And I are both like hard headed people, you know?
Yes.
And big personalities. And so, you know, I think the number one thing I could have done was trusted Kelly and given Kelly that vote, because she really wanted to get Drew out. And I really should have just like gone with her, and instead of being, but you have to keep your options open. So it's so hard to balance between like, oh, this alliance, but you know, we really should have gotten Drew at that six split.
Oh my gosh. It is such a hard, I mean, it is such a hard game. I can't imagine. I mean, it is such a hard game. You, like you said, your brain brain on day 10 was already going. So then when you get to that point, right, where you have to really make these strategic decisions, you're kind of like, mm-hmm, do I really like have the clarity or even the energy to really like keep going? I can't even imagine. Like, I, you know, I miss a meal here and I'm foggy.
I know, you right?
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And so it was difficult because at the time, Sifu at the camp wasn't really playing with, like, you know, I was trying to talk to him. Mm-hmm. I was like, I don't want you to go home. Like, he wasn't really giving me anything. And so I'm like, okay, clearly you don't really want to work together. So then it ended up being him because he wasn't trying to make a plan with anyone. And so it's just like, well, you don't want to work together. Drew is at least giving me something. And I felt pretty good with him, Emily and Austin. And so I was like, okay, I see potential here. And I saw potential in Sifu until he wasn't giving me anything. And then he was like napping while we were like scrambling for tribal. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we could have gotten something together.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I mean, so like another question I have, just like, there was two people basically on your season that quit, which, you know, we're like, what in the world is going on? Like, as fans, and like, let me go. Find me there.
It's infuriating.
You know, it is a little bit infuriating. And then, you know, we're recording this basically 1 week after the first episode aired of season 46. And we get another player who doesn't necessarily quit the game, but has like this mentality of kind of wanting to give up. And you're like, what is going on with these people? And I don't know, you living it and being there, that frustration too. Like, what is going on? Like, what's your take on this?
Yeah. So my take on this is it is a social experiment at the end of the day, you know, and
so
part of that social experiment, like, we have to remember that, like, this is a social experiment. And part of that social experiment is that people are going to opt out of the social experiment.
Yeah.
And for me, watching Jelinski, if I was like, I'm Q in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, even if you don't think you're going to finish, like, one, don't volunteer for things that you don't think you can do. And two, it's like that, just like, I could never like let my team down like that. Like, that is just who I am. Mm-hmm. I can't quit. I won't quit. And also, like, struggle is fun for me. Like,
no, true.
I like to push myself. That's really important for me, is like pushing myself and emotionally, spiritually, mentally. And so it's really interesting because I do just see it as a social experiment. And in our season, having two quits, the Sean quit really, really hurt my game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so it was hard for me to,
like, what are you doing?
See, and like learning that he had kind of volunteered to go, because I was like, damn, like, I feel like, you know, he was going through a really hard time. And what you don't see is that we are sitting in tents for hours, not able to talk to each other. We're sitting on dirty floors in these tents, waiting for tribal council to start, waiting for these challenges to start. And like, really, really weighs on you. And, you know, his time on Lulu wasn't great. And I think being in that tent, like, there's like a tribal council where he's waiting hours before getting to go. And you're just sitting there. You have to be silent. You can't do anything if cameras aren't on you. And so there's like, it's like, outside of playing the game, like, production aspects are also super difficult. And so and that's not something you anticipate.
Yeah.
And so going through his experience, experiencing, you know, all of it. And even though, like, you expect to play the game, there's all these other things that you have to go through in order to play the game. I have so much compassion for him, even if I'll never understand it. And like, a part of me is like sad because like, I saw him as somebody who could win the game. Like, Sean's good out there. Like, I was like to align with him when I was over at Lulu, and I just was like, I really wish that like maybe him and Emily switch and he's on New Bella with me, and like, I would have been able to give him, he would have known he had somebody because we had already made connections. And so after Sabaya left and after like just the mess of Lulu, it can really break you down. And on top of all the other aspects of the game, so I have so much compassion for that. And then Hannah, like, honestly, she'll forever be remembered. Like, nobody's going to forget
<That's>
Hannah.
True.
And, you know, there's people can have their feelings about it, but at the end of the day, it is a social experiment. And that's kind of my view on it. And, like, inevitably, you're going to get people who are like, this experience is not for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, yeah, she's taking a spot, but could have happened to the other person too.
And it's also, it's easy for us sitting on our couch to say something about it too.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's easy for us to have opinions of ours when we're
absolutely
sitting comfy on our sofas.
And we're not seeing all the behind the scenes stuff. You know, for us, you just got dropped off on a beach and, you know.
Yeah.
There it was. You just pick up that torch and walk right on over to tribal. Yes, you do. You know?
Yeah. They were getting so much rain over there. Her toenails are getting close to falling off. Like, she was going through it. And I think it's super important to, like, live in your truth. And that's something I love so much about Hannah. And, like, that's why we connected so much when we were out there. Once she realized she didn't hate me. It's always a funny story. It's like, I hated you. It's like, you were having so much fun and you were everything I wanted to be that I could not have in myself out there.
Together,
I was just like, this is the best thing. And she's like, I hate my life.
She's like, get away from me. You're too positive. Yeah.
Actually, though, she, like, ran away from me when I came to Lulu. What y'all missed out on of me being over at Lulu, it was, like, gold. I was like, there's no way they can't show this. It's really crazy that, like, the footage has not been leaked. Like,
outtakes. I got to see
the outtakes. We need some behind the scenes. Yeah, or, yeah,
outtakes. As far as the quits go, I mean, I think it's just humans put in an experiment. And you're going to get a lot of variety of the way people handle it.
This show has been on for over 20 years, too. So, like, generational people, you know, people are different in different generations.
Yeah.
I really think that.
Absolutely.
So, like, for like Sean and Hannah to be so honest with themselves, where I think somebody in maybe a previous season, a different generation would have been like suffered through that to an extent, even though it was,
even when you're playing in the game with older generation and you know, you're playing a totally different game and you're viewing it through a totally different lens.
Totally. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's really beautiful that our generation is kind of like advocating for ourselves more and like are learning our boundaries and like not only learning our boundaries, being like, if this isn't for me, like, why would I suffer through something just for somebody else's approval? Mm-hmm. And I do think that is very much a generational thing. And because the show has been on so long, it's like that maybe wasn't accepted 20 years ago. You know, no one would even ever dare to think to do that because that wasn't part of like our social norm. But in our generation, me being like similar to age as Hannah and Sean, it's like not only were we all supportive of them, we like understand and like we're proud of people who are able to like choose what they want for themselves. And I think that there is like a shift in cult. I think Survivor is a reflection of the reflection of the culture that in like the society we live in. And so I think those are actually really perfect examples if we're going to look at Survivor as a whole and like its purpose as a show and how it's supposed to mock culture and society and like where we're at. It's like you can choose to leave something that does not serve you.
True. And like throughout this conversation, now I'm like seeing like, you know, that the older generations would choose a career path and get on the corporate ladder and they'd stay there. You'd be at your job for 45 years before you're retired or whatever.
Whether you're
and
miserable
like,
or
now
not.
We're like, this isn't bringing me joy. This isn't what I want. I'm going to move on. We're going to do the next thing. Or even like when we're talking about adoption, because we are adopted, you know, back in the day, adoptions were like, no, you don't talk about that. Adoptees, you're just supposed to be happy. Don't talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have this whole generation of children that grew up as adoptees that are like, no, I have feelings about this and I'm allowed to talk about this.
Yeah.
So it's just funny to see the different generations. And it's really cool to see it play out in the gameplay of Survivor. It really is. I love that you say it's like a magnifying glass to our society and culture.
It really is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you were so like, just as you're describing yourself on the show, that's how I felt watching you. You were truly such a bright light and somebody who was positive and laughed and goofy. And I think you brought joy to your tribe.
You were fun to watch. We always love when there's that person on Survivor that's like the fun one to watch.
Yes.
The fun one that comes on the screen and just makes you smile or laugh, you know, laugh out loud.
Whatever you, something.
Yeah.
So there was many reasons that we connected with you, but your story that you shared about reconnecting with your birth father, that was something, you know, we're adoptive moms, as our listeners know, but adoption is huge in our life and all corners of the triad we love and respect and want to elevate. And so when you were telling us that story, it was like, I don't know, Mal and I were texting right away. Like, we need to talk to Kendra. We need to find out more about her story because I love that she's talking about this. So, I mean, if you could tell us part of that story of your life.
Yeah. So I have three dads. Actually, I have a stepdad. I have my adoptive dad that I grew up with. And then I have my biological father who I met when I was 18.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, my mom and my adoptive dad, the one I grew up with, they got divorced when I was 5. And I still went to his house every weekend. They had my brother together. So I have a half brother. And then my biological father, I have two sisters as well.
Okay.
That I met when I was 18.
Wow.
So I grew up growing to my dad's house and around that family, grew up with that family, but always felt like a little different and never understood why, but always felt like, not that they are not amazing people and I don't love them, but just always felt like kind of like, I don't say the black sheep, I say the tie-dye sheep of my family. And I was 15 years old. And my mom had picked me up from softball practice. And I look at her, I go, Mom, you know what my new favorite snack is? She's like, what? I go, pickles and mustard. And she kind of stopped the car and like looked at me really weird. And she goes, your father really loves pickles and mustard. And she never called like my dad that I grew up with, John, my father. She always called him like dad or by his name. And I was like, huh. And like something kind of clicked off. So I go to my dad's house that next weekend. And I go, Dad, you know what my new favorite snack is? He goes, what? I go, pickles and mustard. He goes, that's disgusting. And then I was like, I have a different dad.
Wow. That's how you put it together. That's so funny.
And I call my friends. I'm like, you guys, like, I'm crying. And they're like, Kendra, you can't think he's not your dad because he doesn't like pickles and mustard.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but this is like, I feel it. Like, you know? And so a couple years later, like, then I found out and I kind of knew. Growing up, and then I turned 18, and my mom ended up telling me that, you know, your father, he lives, him and my sisters, and I guess my stepmom, they actually were all living 12 minutes from my college dorm room.
Wow.
And I grew up in the town next to my father and my sisters, like, my whole life.
Wow.
And never knew. And so I mustered up the courage to call him because I had my aunt had his info. And I remember it was like the scariest thing of my life.
Are you kidding?
Dial the number and I'm sitting there and a woman picks up. I was like, I didn't prepare for this.
Oh, yeah. Like,
you're like, oops,
you know,
like,
can I speak to, you know, this guy? And she was like, yeah, just hold it 1 minute. And it's just like, may I ask who's calling? And I was like, it's Kendra. And that's all I said. Wow. And then, you know, the phone shuffles around and then he picks up and he goes, I've been waiting 18 years.
Is that the first thing he said?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
And I fall to my knees and started bawling my eyes out. We talked for like 3.5 hours.
Yeah.
He was like, every September 25th, I crack a beer for you, which is why the beer made me think of him on the show.
Yeah.
And then we met up like 2 days later. We each ate a whole pizza in front of Prince of Pizza, which is like a kind of showed in the show. And then, yeah, we just had such an amazing relationship ever since. And I met my sisters. I love them so much. It's so funny. I always wanted sisters growing up and I have them.
Yes.
And it's been really interesting. I still have so much of my family I need to meet. And also another big part of this is I never really spoke to my adoptive dad about all of this. You know, everything was kind of secret or like not. So Survivor actually opened the door for me to have an open, because I knew there's a potential of this being shown.
Right.
So it kind of opened the door for me to have this conversation and rebuild this relationship with my adoptive father. And it's been really beautiful. And it's been really, really, like, been really, really big for me. Sorry. And yeah, it's been really beautiful. And so I'm just in a place now where I told my story. And, like, my family knows my story. And, like, they know how I feel. And, like, people had feelings about me talking about that on the show.
Sure.
And it was a lot to work through. But I feel like it's opened the door for more love and understanding and just, like, relationship building. And so I'm like, if anything that Survivor gave me the courage to have these conversations and open the door to, like, deeper relationships with, like, my blood family and also my adoptive family and what that means for me. So that's kind of my story there.
I mean, I feel like you had mentioned earlier, like, you kind of, like, found yourself and connected with yourself on a deeper level in Survivor. And I feel like when we are able to know our whole story and then embrace our whole story and live it out loud, so it's not like a secret story we keep inside of us, that does, like, do something to you. It allows
you. It frees you.
Yeah, to be, like, your truest version of yourself. So that is incredible.
Absolutely.
And absolutely. I have to ask, do you guys eat pickles and mustard together?
Oh, yeah.
Does he still like pickles and mustard?
That's all he gets on his cheeseburgers. He just gets cheese, pickles, and mustard. That's it. Pickles and
mustard. Love it.
Gosh. Yeah. I think if I ever write a book, it'll either be called Pickles and Mustard or, like, a chapter will be called Pickles and Mustard.
For sure.
You should totally write that. Like,
and that was when I first learned that my intuition was so strong, and it's really important for me to trust that. And yeah, it's been a wild journey. Especially with Survivor kind of leading the way for me to have these harder conversations.
Deeper. So I do have a question, and it's okay if you're like, oh, I'm not going to answer that. That's too personal. But so did your sisters know about you growing up, or did they learn about you at the age of 18 as well?
They learned about me at the age of 18 as well, which is also crazy. So it's like, oh, you thought you were the older sister? There's actually another older sister. My oldest younger sister.
Yeah.
Okay. The middle one. She's literally my twin. We're, like, the same person. We speak the same. It's, like, freaky.
Love it.
Wow. She's, like, the short blonde version of me. Yeah. And we met each other and we just, like, were staring at each other. We're like, what is this?
Like,
we
weird.
Talk the same. It's so strange. Like, those genes are strong.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to go back, though, because you said, you know, like, talking about your intuition, when you felt that, you're like, I feel like, not only did my mom say pickles and mustard and make me feel that, but there's something like, I feel it, like, even whether she denies it or not, there is, and I believe this, and I know Mallory does, is for adoptees, even children like mine who joined my family from infancy, there is that biological pull to be with your biological family. And you feel it, like, it's in you, regardless of whether you grow up with a beautiful family or not. There is that, like, innate pull, and there's nothing like, so I think that's so
that piece of you.
Yeah. That's so beautiful that you were able to, I don't know, wrap that up and experience that. And now, like you said, so beautifully, more room for love, you know?
We had one adoptee. We had one adoptee.
Go ahead.
On our podcast, towards the beginning. And she actually called it like a primal instinct.
Oh yeah.
It was like, it was just there. Like, she just knew.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I, my sister got married this September, and I was able to be around a lot of my family for the first time. And there was just something that, oh my God, it, like, brings me to tears. I was around, like, my these people that, like, understood me, who I didn't even, like, met before. I was just like, dang, like, and not that I don't love my adoptive family, like, they're amazing people. Yeah. But, like, there was just something, I felt very seen, and, like, I didn't need to explain myself, and there was just really just, like, this camaraderie and this, like, natural connection. I'm like, oh, these are my people. Like, they're all crazy. Yeah. They're singing. Like, my uncle's doing backflips, like, off the diving board into the pool. Like, everyone's super competitive. I'm like, oh, okay, this is where I get it from. Yeah. So there was this, oh, this is where I got it from. And like, it was, you know, my sister, like, they're a little nervous that, oh, is Kendra going to be okay? She's not bringing in a plus one. I'm like, my dad's like, oh, is she going to be okay? Like, she's going to be running this party. And, you know, it was really funny. And it was so fun to just like connect with that part of my family. So,
yes.
That's awesome. I love to hear that.
It's kind of like, it felt like a homecoming. It's like this part, yeah. These parts of myself that I can see reflected in other people who are my, like, or I'm blood related to, but it's just like, was really, really cool. And I think a part of my adoption journey, like I travel a lot. I've been living in different like communities, and like community living is so important to me. And like finding my soul family, like that's just been very much like a big theme of my life. And I think that is like, I can see how living and being part of like an adoptive family is like, love is not blood. Like family is not always blood. And like, we can look to the people in our lives, and like the people in our lives can become our family just through like caring about each other and showing up for each other. And I really do see that in my friendships. It's like, my friends are my family. Mm-hmm. And just knowing that, and also I always said, it's funny, if I am ever to become a parent, I want to adopt. Like I've always wanted to adopt. And like, that's the way I see myself becoming a mother one day. Cause that's really important to me. Mm-hmm. And I know there's so many kids out there, but it's really funny how like subconsciously this has shaped a lot of my life.
Yeah,
in such a beautiful way, and of forming family all over the world. So. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, no, I love that. And I know your story will be encouraging to so many people listening, honestly, whether it be birth families or whether it be adoptees who are in that place of like confusion, fear, doubt, whatever it is, and stepping into connecting with their biological children, biological parents, whatever it is. And I just think it's so beautiful that you are speaking to the courage that it took to do that. And that now on the other side, it's so beautiful to feel that peace that you have. I know not all stories will end up that beautiful, because people are messy, and there are things in life that
every story is different.
Yeah. That kind of change that. But it really is really encouraging to so many listening to your story. So if you could like say something to them, give them a little bit of advice to maybe it be birth families or adoptees, because reunification is a thing that so many long for, and it might seem like a distant thing to them, whether, especially, I guess I'm speaking for the birth mom community now, like such a distant thing for them to be like, this may never happen for me. Could you give them a little, maybe some encouragement, some words of advice, something to get them through?
Absolutely. So it's really taking me back to like, the times where I was just like mustering up the courage to reach out, whether that's too recently to my adopted dad and having this conversation with him, or reaching out to my birth father and having that conversation with him. It's like, I never held any expectation, because it's their journey too. And understanding that like, although we're going through it, it's like everyone has their own journey with it. So I never put any type of expectation on how they should respond to what I'm saying. And I thought it was just important to like do the hard thing, even if I didn't know how it was going to go, because at least after that, you know, and it's not, you're not like waiting there wondering. And so like, trust, and that is just such a amazing formula to like learning how to trust yourself. And so I feel like my journey really, really, like regardless of how it went, it was always leading me closer to myself, and knowing that at the end of the day, like that is like, we're all here to like get closer to ourselves and discover who we are. And like, we all have different paths and journeys, and regardless of the outcome, you being brave and showing up for yourself and showing up for what your heart wants, it's like, that is such a beautiful feat. That's such a beautiful thing to be proud of, like regardless of the outcome. So like, yeah, like it's so scary. So scary. I remember just like shaking and being like, am I going to lose something because of this? Or am I going to be unwanted? But, like, you can't know if you're unwanted, or, like, you can't know if it's going to work out unless you try. So, like, always just, like, betting on yourself and knowing that, like, you have to trust yourself and you have to trust your path. And, like, regardless of the outcome, like, listen to your heart and follow that and, like, live with a courageous heart, because you're never going to regret that at the end of the day, like, regardless if it hurts or if it works out well. So listening to your heart, living with a courageous heart, and, like, trusting your intuition and trusting your instinct is just, like, the biggest thing for me. And, like, not letting others dictate, like, find out for yourself, you know, like, because there's lots of narratives around X, Y, and Z, or maybe who they were or whatever. Like, find out for yourself and be open to the possibilities without expectation, you know, be open to however this is going to blossom for you.
Yeah. And I think it's so cool that you said, you know, whoever it is on the other side of your family that you're trying to seek, trying to reconnect with, giving them grace as well, like you said, and this is their story too. So they have their own feelings. So it takes the pressure off of yourself, to be honest with you, to know that you are the only one who has to have a reaction, the only one who has to feel things, to kind of share that with both sides is kind of, it's graceful, but also it's giving yourself grace too. Right. That's
absolutely
a great word.
Absolutely. I think that's really big with how I approached everything. I really just had no expectations and, like, totally just have compassion and grace for everyone involved, because it's, like, their story too. It's not just me.
Right.
So.
Right. Wow. Well, girl, we are so grateful for you sharing your story, being vulnerable. And I am so glad Survivor made the edit, because that is so huge. You know, it's like, that is so great. So we are so grateful for you. Before we let you go, though, we like to end every Funding Love podcast with a fun little question, because we are Funding Love. We want to ask you, Kendra, what are you loving right now in life? A book, a season, whatever it is. I've been following you on Instagram. You have, like, some pigeon pee in your yard, or you have something, right? Like, something you've been picking from the trees. Tell us, what are you loving right now?
I love so many things right now. I love, like, three things.
Okay,
I am loving Australian Survivor. I am obsessed. Like,
I've heard this. Actually heard this. You're not the first person.
If you're not watching
that.
Australian Survivor, what are you doing with your life?
Okay, it then I need to do something.
Wow, I'm not sure what I'm doing with my life anymore. I'm questioning everything. No.
You should. It's so good. Two, I am loving living off grid in my little community. In Maui, living in just, like, waking up with the sun, going to sleep with the sun, just being really involved in nature. And three, I am over the moon just loving my freaking job and running my business. And
amazing.
I have put all my eggs in the basket. I have just been doing literally what feels like my life purpose. And I just couldn't be happier. And I feel so fulfilled for the first time in my life with a job and what I'm doing and what I'm offering to the world. And just being vulnerable and connecting with people through astrology and tarot. And that is just, like, lighting up my freaking life right now, like times a thousand. So those are the three things I'm just super excited about. And yeah, life is good. Life is really good.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, keep shining, because you are just a beautiful person and a bright light. And I'm so glad that we've got the chance to connect with you. Yeah. And I hope we stay connected.
We're so grateful.
And tell our listeners where they can find you, like Instagram. Where can they find you?
Instagram, website.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
First off, thank you so much, ladies. Like, when you reached out to me, I was like, oh my God, these are doors that I didn't even know were going to open. From me sharing my story. And a lot of people have reached out, oh, I'm in a similar place, or that really inspired me. So it's just beautiful to know that my vulnerability breeds vulnerability, and I'm here to share and love and connect. And you can find me on Instagram at _KendraRuthless. I also have a beautiful new website. It's called Happy to Be Here, happy 2TOB, just the letter B, here.com. And for anyone looking for a little, like, tarot or astrological guidance, I'm here for you. And I just, it's filling up my heart. And the feedback that I'm getting is just really, really incredible. I feel super in my purpose. And I'm here to just help others find freedom through self-discovery. And so that is just so my calling, so my purpose. And so that's where you can find me. Yeah. I am on Twitter if you want to read me talk shit about Survivor. So that's at Kendra Ruthless on Twitter. But yeah, okay. Instagram is my main jam and my website. And I'm going to be coming out with like a little email subscription, doing some horoscopes soon, and little mini readings. So I have a lot of fun offerings I'm really excited to bring about and shine into this world. And just so grateful for all the connection that has happened because of this little Survivor experience.
Little thing called Survivor.
This little show. Well, girl, keep rocking it. Keep being you. And once again, thank you for joining us on this show. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to this episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We'll see y'all next week.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Funding Love Podcast. We are a crowdfunded nonprofit, which means that people like you can help make a lasting impact in the lives of adoptive families and birth moms. At Funding Love, we create post-adoption experiences that strengthen bonds, build community, and restore people. And when you partner with us, whether that is giving online, signing up to become a monthly donor, or simply buying merchandise from our shop, you are Funding Love.